Why you are busy enjoying your lunch, why you are busy having some time from 1300 hours, take time and listen to OTR News Bulletin.
On the radio news analysis, we go beyond the headlines. We don't just tell you what's happening, we ask why it's happening, how it affects ordinary Namibians, and what it means for the country's future. We examine the structures behind news, connect policy to people's lived realities, and bring in expert voices to make sense of where Namibia is heading.
You want to get into touch with global governance, global diplomacy, economic relations, trade, statistics, human and infrastructure development, and you want to see how policy planning and policy implementation is connected in Namibia. Make time and listen to OTR from 1300 hours to 1430 with Happy Juju.
Eagle FM, the eye.
A very good afternoon to you, Namibia, and to all our listeners are joining us from across the country and around the world. Thank you for tuning in to Eagle FM, the station where conversations count. I am your host, Ndafa Happy Juju, and you are listening to On The Reading News Analysis, your weekday deep dive into the stories shaping Namibia's social, economic, and governance landscape. It's Wednesday, the 12th of November, 2025, and as we reach the midweek mark, we continue our mission to unpack the forces shaping Namibia's path forward, from policy decisions to community-driven change, from innovation in our industries to accountability in our institutions. Now here on the radar, we go beyond the breaking news. We unpack the context, challenge assumptions, and connect the dots, delivering balanced, evidence-based insights that help you see the full picture behind the headlines. Now every weekday from 1300 hours to 1430, we take you inside Namibia's most pressing conversations, featuring expert voices, in-depth analysis, archived audio, and of course, your contributions that keep the national dialogue alive and honest. Because in a time of fast-moving information, our goal is not just to inform you, but to help you understand the information that we provide. So as we bring you today's program, we'll be spotlighting key national developments, exploring their wider implications, and engaging with the people driving progress across the country. Remember, you can catch On The Radar on all Eagle FM frequencies, stream us live via the Eagle FM website, or download the Eagle FM app, and join in also on our WhatsApp channel for exclusive clips, insights, and behind-the-scenes discussions. Now, wherever you are, in your car, at work, or relaxing at home, stay tuned, stay thoughtful, and stay engaged, because right here on the radar, Namibia doesn't just listen, Namibia comes to think. Now let's jump straight into today's top stories. The Economic Commission for Africa, Sub-Saharan Office for Southern Africa, The Economic Commission for Africa, Sub-Regional Office for Southern Africa, launched a three-day training workshop for micro, small, and medium-sized enterprises on market access and market information, supplying automotive products through sustainable procurement. Now, the workshop, which runs from the 11th to the 13th of November 2025 in Namibia's capital, brings together small, micro, and medium enterprises, procurement officers, industry associations, and policy makers from Botswana, Lesotho, Namibia, South Africa, Zambia, and Zimbabwe. Now, the initiative aims to strengthen SMEs' capacity to integrate into the automotive value chain, especially as suppliers of components, through adaptive sustainable procurement practices, understanding buyer requirements, and leveraging market information tools. Now, among the core outputs will be the rollout of a new automotive sustainable supplier finder database designed to link SMEs to larger firms and industrial buyers. Now, the choice of hosting it in Namibia underscores Namibia's growing role and ambition in the regional automotive manufacturing and component supply space. Previously, ECA engagement with Namibia have included the development of an automotive policy framework in April and September 2025, aimed at guarding the country's integration into the regional value chains. Workshop participants will tackle a range of issues from quality and logistics for automotive supplies, standards and certifications, via supplier networking, also to sustainable procurement and local content requirements. Now, the training also seeks to help small, medium enterprises access market intelligence, identify potential buyers, and navigate regional trade frameworks under the African Continental Free Trade Area. As Namibia continues to diversify its economy beyond extractive sectors and building local industrial capacity, such interventions are timely. Now, by equipping local businesses to supply into automotive value chains, the hope is to create jobs, to create employment, of course, foster inclusive growth, and accelerate Namibia's industrialization trajectory. Of course, these workshops matter because they stimulate industrialization and value addition. Also, it helps support SMEs by holding down the workshop. Now, of course, let's take a listen to Olainyika Bandele, who spoke at the workshop.
So my name is Olainyika Bandele, Vika in Persian, and I'm the chief of the Inclusive Industrialization Section in UNECA, based out of our regional office in Lusaka. So happy to be here again in Namibia. As I always say, I lived here many years ago, so somehow it always feels like coming home. So it feels very familiar. I want to start by just welcoming you all again. And this is going to be a very, very interesting conversation. We will make sure that everybody feels comfortable in terms of the room and the space. But just to say welcome to everybody that came in, especially late last night. So I'd like to start by representing our host ministry for today, for the Namibia Ministry of Industry, Mines and Energy, represented by Ms. Fiona Makandi, who's the Deputy Director of Industrialization within the ministry. Of course, member states from the various government agencies and the private sectors of the five countries represented here. Our consultant on this project, represented by AI Rich, who will introduce themselves, but we have the CEO, Mr. Johan Dijega, and also the engineer consultant, Ms. Gahanri Vandoris. Ladies and gentlemen, it is my sincere honor to welcome you all to this capacity building workshop on MSMEs, on market access and market information, on supplying automotive products through sustainable procurement sponsored by our partners, African Bank. As I said before, I believe we're in for a treat, a very interactive conversation. And I think in years to come, I am hopeful that we'll look back and think about what we will deliver through the Sustainable Supplier Finder database that we are going to be talking about over the next couple of days. It's an opportunity for SMEs to be further integrated into the value chain for the region. And I think I want to tell you why, for me, this is a big issue and drawing attention to some of those big picture issues. I think, first of all, focusing on SMEs' access in the automotive sector in Africa is one of the critical issues. We know that the automotive sector in Africa is projected to reach approximately $28 billion by 2030. This is according to a lot of analysis that we see from ourselves, UNECA, but other partners. And this is driven by, of course, government incentives and urbanization and the growing demographic that we see in our region. But in terms of production, SMEs are quite small within the space in comparison to what we see in global markets. Leading agencies supporting the automotive sector, such as African Bank, the AFCFTA Secretariat, and UNECA, position that Africa needs to get to 3 to 5 million vehicle car production within the next 10 years. And we're starting from a base of about 1 million, which we will discuss. And most of that production, as we know, is South Africa, Morocco, followed by Egypt, Tunisia, Kenya's coming up, Ghana. There are many countries that are wanting to participate in this value chain. Key trends include a preference for sport utility vehicles with emerging efforts in electric vehicle adoption, including some of the projects that we see in the region. And as I said, we know at the moment the production that we do on the continent is about 1.2% of global production. So we know, according to our population, we're very low in comparison to what other regions are achieving. At the same time, we know that SMEs working in the sector are flourishing in component manufacturing. A small percentage outside of South Africa and Morocco are supplying OEMs, but mostly they're servicing the secondary service aftercare market. Notably, SMEs in Africa account for approximately 90% of their businesses and create between 60 to 80% of the jobs in various countries. So we know that they are a critical entry point for the potential of this sector. So I want to just draw our attention to then why the focus on SMEs in securing market access within the automotive sector. So there are a number of points that I'd like to draw our attention to. First of all, the foundation of the supply chain. So we know that SMEs account for the majority of businesses, as you said, and they're key suppliers with specialized parts, components, and sub-assemblies to larger manufacturers. But we know, second, we know additionally that their market linkages through partnerships is an area that needs to be further explored. A primary method for market access is, of course, through business-to-business collaborations and supplier contracts with domestic and international firms. And so we position that the support through supply development programs facilitated by OEMs and government agencies could be a helpful entry point for those SMEs to become deeply integrated into the value chain. Of course, we also know that this is a niche and also an emerging market. And so SMEs have that potential to leverage their flexibility and cost advantage to supply parts within this sector or subsector. We turn our attention a little bit, and we'll talk about this when we do some of the presentations later in terms of some of the case studies we want to bring to your attention. But we know that SMEs have that potential for export contribution, and we've seen other countries like India and Thailand leverage their SMEs to capacitate them within the sector, which has helped those countries to become.
Great news! Impact just got even better. We have added brand new features to make your experience smoother, faster, and more powerful than ever before. Ready to unlock the full potential of IMBA? Get all exclusive features for just $36 Namibian a month, or save even more with our special subscription plans. 5% discount for 3 months subscription, 10% discount for 6 months subscription, and 25% discount for 12 months subscription. Choose the plan that works best for you and start enjoying everything IMBA has to offer at an unbeatable price. IMBA, where the world congregates. Download it and subscribe today.
Which has helped those countries to become global sourcing hubs.
And now let's take a listen to Ilona Nkandi, who is the Deputy Director of Industrialization at the Ministry of Industry, Mines and Energy of Namibia, also speaking at the workshop, that is the program of work for the capacity building training workshop for MSMEs on market access and market information on supplying automotive products through sustainable procurement.
Nkandi, I represent the Ministry of Industries, Mines and Energy. You know, Namibia is a country that is known for changing its technologies. Before, we were called Ministry of Industrialization, Trade and SME Development, Ministry of Trade and Industry. Now we've been combined with the Ministry of Mines and Energy, the industry spots, because we need the minerals to build industries, right? Thank you very much. Director of Proceedings, Mr. Nauta, Ms. Olayinka Badere, Chief Industrialization, EPA, esteemed colleagues, our dear honorable guests, and distinguished participants online, ladies and gentlemen, welcome to Grossbowman Resort. It is a great honor and a privilege for me to welcome you all to the Republic of Namibia. For those who have not been here, and it's the very first time, please take it all in and come back again. I know you will return. I welcome you to this 3D capacity building workshop for MSMEs on market access and market information for supplying automotive products through sustainable procurement of automotive convened by the ECA sub-regional office for Southern Africa. This workshop seeks to strengthen MSMEs' ability to use a database scheme for sustainable supplier finder that supports business linkages across the automotive supply chain. I believe today's gathering represents a significant step towards enhancing the competitiveness and inclusivity of our SMEs within the evolving automotive value chain. We know that these SMEs are the backbones of our economies, driving innovation, creating jobs, and contributing substantially to industrial development. Yet many of our firms still face barriers in accessing reliable market information, meeting procurement standards, and positioning their products in competitive, sustainable markets. I hope this workshop intends to develop practical strategies to close those gaps. And I believe over the next 3 days, you explore tools and techniques that help SMEs understand the market requirements, aligning operations with sustainability principles, seizing emerging opportunities in the automotive sector. A robust and competitive automotive industry cannot be developed in isolation. It requires regional cooperation, policy alignments, and practical instruments that ensure to enable SMEs to meet these market needs. So I believe this database scheme that you will review is one such instrument to improve access to market information, increase transparency across the value chain, support component manufacturers, and connect SMEs with buyers seeking sustainable and reliable supply. And thus,
And there you had it from Ilona Nkandi from the Ministry of Mines and Energy. And she's speaking about increasing transparency across the value chain. Of course, this is a conversation that brings together stakeholders, brings together industry players, and of course brings together those that lay at the ground or at the heart of policy. In other words, policymakers themselves. And yeah, it's something that calls for a balance and a need for standards and quality, which obviously will raise costs, but then would also need support and small local firms who may not yet meet global benchmarks. So it's a time where really business people can come together and ask the questions that they need to ask, that they need to be addressed, so that they can understand if they should be interested and willing to partake in such, or perhaps be interested in venturing in such type of businesses. Now it's the time to actually get the understanding that's necessary for them to really understand what's going on and ask the pressing questions to the people, and not just the people, but the right people who are there. Remember, it's bringing together a number of African countries, and obviously they will learn from each other's experiences. That is Botswana, Lesotho, Namibia, South Africa, Zambia, and Zimbabwe. So as they come together and discuss such conversations to see where they can actually leverage on this opportunity, where they can maximize, where they can perhaps learn from fallout or mistakes that perhaps other countries have made in trying to come up with an automotive industry themselves, or to venture into automotive industry themselves and manufacture car parts, where the challenges are, what to do, what not to do, and all that. But now let's pause right here and take a trip to the marketplace, but we'll be back shortly still discussing on this very same topic. Stay tuned.
Lipura nenge no wapungwa eva tere uliko ni maondo tuto ingida ashike kapeno nwe kutite opoye ekukurile Oshafafa na nongeshefa ili mehola mo iho etike kovano ile koshuala. Onongeshefa ya pumbwa kukaraya kovano. Okupitira mo Eagle FM otuna evi toda njuka. Okukwetira oipindi konu konda doili nawa. Nune udo otukwetira o special ange tashake ngeshefa omarudi dayo loka. Opone ushendife nawa nukumona oijamo ili nawa. Ninge pata fanona Monica ko Eagle FM. Onora etatu imwe bali heali nola natu heali bali no heali. Ile kumberewa, nora hetatu natu, bali o hetatu matatu, o mafilane, Eagle FM, the eye.
Eagle FM lets you express your constitutional rights of freedom of expression without fear of favor.
This is actually, to put it mildly, an economic scandal.
Fraud.
Not fraud, it's a scandal.
Scandal.
Why do you give a tender to somebody who does not have capacity to build? Why should you do that? You know a person who does not have the capacity to build.
Eagle FM lets you talk.
That's why I'm always telling people in Parliament, let me not take up my Katatura manners.
Right.
Because I grew up in Katatura.
Uh-huh.
And I will not hesitate to tell you off if it is needed to.
Be part of the debate by setting the agenda.
My response in terms of Rwanda at 6% is that we had been there before. We've had 6% growth before.
Mm.
It's not something that Namibia has not achieved in the past, and it's not something that Namibia will not be able to achieve in the future.
Eagle FM, the eye.
My friend, why do you seem so worried?
Ace, I'm planning an event for next weekend, eh? And I don't know how to best get people to hear about it.
Saima, don't worry about those small things. Contact Eagle FM today. Eagle FM has a dedicated team that can travel anywhere countrywide to broadcast live at any event, such as a promotion, organizational launch, anniversary, wedding, funeral, political or traditional and church events, and basically any event that you wish to broadcast on a national level. Call them now and talk to Monica at 081-270-3727 or the office number 083-288-400. Eagle FM, the eye.
Welcome back. You are still tuned into On the Reading News Analysis right here on Eagle FM. Now, for a thorough conversation on this, we caught up with Dwight Links, reporter and journalist. Dwight Links also attended the workshop. Let's take a listen.
A very good afternoon to you, Dwight Links, and thank you for making time for us right here on the Reading News Analysis.
Thank you very much, Happy, and good afternoon to the listeners. And nice to talk to you guys again.
Of course. Now, Dwight, I understand that you are attending a workshop that has been organized by the Economic Commission for Africa, of course, sub-regional office for Southern Africa. And the aim is to bring together small and medium-sized enterprises on market access and market information, particularly looking at supplying automotive products through sustainable procurement. Dwight, just break it down for us and before we actually get into how this can help Namibia.
Thank you very much, Happy. And the particular subject matter or the particular aim, Happy, is a discussion of trying to enhance Africa's particular role in the manufacturing as well as also in the support functions and value chains that play a crucial role to the selling of cars and specifically also the aftermarket. The term aftermarket means something else, but just in terms of the after-sales support functions that also take place. So it's a question, Happy, that you've got to look at parts procurement between, not just between, let's say, the original equipment manufacturer, which is the manufacturer of the car, but also those who can supply parts, let's say, for repairs, for maintenance, for servicing, and for all those other particular functionalities.
Mm-hmm.
Some of the particular discussions, obviously, that took place in this, because we're now in day two, is a discussion of how to get the Southern African community to play a more advanced role or to heighten the current role that they are playing in the automotive sector value chain discussion. And this is a scenario of firstly identifying who's doing what and who has done, who has gotten experience or exposure to various particular functionalities.
Mm-hmm.
There are, as some of the listeners would have seen, that there are the social media updates that I provided in yesterday. indicates that we have various SADC representatives here, not from governments. Well, there are some policymakers from their governmental offices, even locally, but predominantly it's also about bringing some private sector and MSME representatives from those private sectors present here at this particular discussion. I have to cite this in terms of as an observation, Happy, that in most cases it has been just the entrepreneurs and the business owners that have participated a lot, have given a lot of insight, have shared a lot of experiences. Mm-hmm. They currently now, while I'm giving this report to you, there's currently a panel discussion taking place based upon exposure by MSMEs in terms of participating in this sector.
Mm-hmm.
So it is a highly nuanced, highly multidimensional, highly multifaceted, a particular conversation, specifically that sentence around how do you enhance the current role of the MSMEs to actually play an advanced manufacturing role in the Southern African context, to also provide, make parts, to provide services, to provide expertise in this aspect. Because, Happy, if just for context for the listeners, in many cases, the easiest way for countries to try and achieve industrialization is if they have a car manufacturing plant, not an assembly plant, but a car manufacturing plant that helps them with that particular component of advancing their manufacturing base.
Interesting. Now, one particular aspect that also stands out for me is that the training seeks to help small, medium enterprises access market intelligence, identify potential buyers, and navigate regional trade frameworks under the African Continental Free Trade Area. Now, I don't know whether we are getting ourselves way ahead, maybe, or perhaps really this is something that's really tangible that could then we could see it taking place and actually bringing fruits to Namibia. But how exactly do you think this might get running? How will the ball probably get started? I mean, which SMEs are they going to partner up, or what exactly are the pointers that they're speaking at in terms of picking it up, like really starting now the groundwork?
Well, some of the groundwork has already started, specifically, Happy, just to answer you on that last part of the question. For example, the listeners will hear the opportunity of the report that I just sent through of Mr. De Jager, Johan De Jager, a South African from the Automotive Investment Holdings Organization. They do a lot of market research regarding the automotive manufacturing sector. He has explained specifically that there is a particular discussion in terms of where African countries, and you can go throughout SADC, are already producing certain particular parts for certain particular cars or certain particular brands. And then there's also the discussion about certifications and standardization or standards, meaning subscribing to standard manufacturing standards, which is also something that can be achieved. In many scenarios is, in some cases, that you will have an MSME that is literally participating in the manufacturing of a specific part, and that specifically the specific part is something that is made for a specific car or for a specific brand or for a specific kind of a category of vehicle, and that the particular MSME can literally, they can build from that particular base. There's another gentleman that also there's also present here who is a who comes from a battery manufacturing business in Botswana, and that also indicates that we literally do have the local presence in the Southern African region, and we obviously sit with the big brother known as South Africa that obviously produces many of the particular components, the particular parts, whether after service or after sales, or whether it be aftermarket, because aftermarket and after sales are two different particular scenarios, being that an aftermarket product is something that plays the role as an original product or an original part, but it serves the same purpose, for example. And this has also been illustrated that we make steering wheels. We can make the rubber for tires for the tire that you have. We can make the seats, meaning the what they call that, the embroidery. No, not embroidery. They call it something else. But literally for, you know, the interior of a car. The only issue we probably have is the highly digitalized inclusion of technology, specifically navigation technology, mm-hmm. and the associated applications and software that we now see in sort of like the new cars that are coming out in Namibia and across Southern Africa, which is brought forward by the European, American, and the Chinese brands in that particular discussion. So the only thing that we probably would have a major deficit in is a technological advancement when it comes to the in-car entertainment area or in-car entertainment systems that are now displaying a lot more integrated technologies in the vehicles of today. So when you had to look at this particular discussion, Happy, you're obviously seeing, okay, so there's a starting base that in many cases is a low-lying fruit, you know, that or low-hanging fruit, as we sometimes hear specifically at various platforms, and then there are sort of like advanced levels to move forward to. And in many cases, it has been now been showcased that there is a presence or there are participants or there are role players, but it's also a question of how do you bring them together to actually know about each other, to also talk to each other, and thus also make a presentation or they present a case to the original equipment manufacturers, i.e. to the vehicle manufacturing companies in Southern Africa.
Interesting. So quite actually, the workshop is bringing together different people, different business people, and of course, different people from different countries, which is really good. They learn from their experiences. And of course, yeah, I think it's a really good workshop, Dwight. But what do you say? I think it's a good workshop at the end of the day. I think SMCs get to have some experience learning from other companies as well. And perhaps when we, you say the groundwork is already up and running, but then perhaps when we get deeper into it, maybe we will learn, of course, from other people's failures and avoid those ones.
That is also another particular focal point, Happy. First thing that we have not heard yet as yet was, you know, how do you achieve the promised land of total manufacturing? In some cases, they haven't spoken yet about skills development, but skills development is obviously an issue in a Namibian context. Specifically, why I say that, Happy, is that this particular conversation is taking place, this one about automotive industry value chain development and MSME inclusion. It's taking place separately from Namibia's Green Hydrogen Project and Green Hydrogen investments, which obviously there is a lot more concerted effort being put there in terms of upskilling and training Namibians who would work for that green hydrogen sector, the renewable energy sector, and any affiliated or let's call it sort of like extended technological spheres that would happen or occur because of the green hydrogen sector particular investments and development. However, we're not hearing extensively about are we trying to advance mechanical training for engineering and just for mechanics at our VTCs. Just the other day I heard that unfortunately only this year our VTCs were converted fully into colleges, which also shows the seriousness in terms of advancing the levels of training, because the youth in hydrogen themselves have, or green hydrogen themselves, earlier this year from one of the IBPR green hydrogen monitor phases have indicated that the biggest issue they faced was when they went for training at the local vocational training centers in Namibia, is that their training ended at level 4. And if you are dealing with a technology like green hydrogen or at the advanced technologies that green hydrogen will then develop, the issue is you need at level 5 to 7 to 8 potentially to be able to be qualified and certified to work in that technology.
Okay.
So it makes the particular roadmap a little bit tricky, because on the one side, where I currently am just giving us coverage of this particular development, you see that, okay, there's like low hanging fruit, low entry qualifications potentially for skilled people like mechanics that can enter into this particular realm. But on the opposite end, Namibia is trying to advance one particular industrial agenda to try and achieve industrialization through this new technology that the EU and our other development partner, Germany, is going to harness or is planning to harness in the future. And they require X kind of skilled Namibians to participate in this realm. So it sort of like gives, positions us in a little bit of a halfway here, halfway over there situation, Happy, that looks like a discussion of what is the true industrial agenda, or are we trying to achieve everything all at once with the limited capacity that we have, and we are happy for any particular partnerships and any particular assistance that can be, that would necessarily help advance those particular developments. Happy?
Yeah, Dwight, I hear you. But that's quite interesting, hey? Nonetheless, Dwight, we sure hope that the workshop continues, obviously, as it is ongoing. I think tomorrow is the last date, right?
Well, technically ending today, but yes.
Oh, okay. Yeah, but nonetheless, thank you, Dwight, for making time for us right here on the Reading News Analysis.
Not a problem.
Mm-hmm. Let's pause here now and take a trip to the marketplace, but we'll be back shortly right here on the Reading News Analysis.
My friend, why do you seem so worried?
Ace, I'm planning an event for next weekend, eh? And I don't know how to best get people to hear about it.
Saima, don't worry about those small things. Contact Eagle FM today. Eagle FM has a dedicated team that can travel anywhere countrywide to broadcast live at any event, such as a promotion, organizational launch, anniversary, wedding, funeral, political or traditional and church events, and basically any event that you wish to broadcast on a national level. Call them now and talk to Monica at 081-270-3727 or the office number 083-288-400. Eagle FM, the eye.
Lipurane ngino wapumbwa Eva tere ulikoni maondo tuto ingida ashike kapeno nwe kutite opoye ekukurile. Oshafafana nongeshefa ili mehola mo iho tike kovano ile koshiwala. Onongeshefa ya pumbwa kukaraya kovano. Okupitira mo Eagle FM otuna evi toda njuka. Okukwetira oipindi konu honda doi inawa. Nune uto otukwetira o special ange tashake ngeshefa omarudi tayo loka. Opone ushendife nawa nukumona oijamo ili nawa. Ninge pata fano na Monica ko Eagle FM. Onora etatu imwe bali heali nola natu heali bali no heali. Ileko berewa nora etatu natu bali o etatu batatu o mafelane Eagle FM. The eye.
Eagle FM lets you express your constitutional rights of freedom of expression without fear of favor.
This is actually, to put it mildly, an economic scandal.
Fraud. So
not a fraud, it's a scandal.
Scandal.
Why do you give a tender to somebody who does not have capacity to build? Why should you do that? You know a person who does not have the capacity to build.
Eagle FM lets you talk.
That's why I'm always telling people in parliament, let me not take up my Katatura manners.
Right.
Because I grew up in Katatura.
Uh-huh.
And I will not hesitate to tell you off if it is needed to.
Be part of the debate by setting the agenda.
My response in terms of Rwanda at 6% is that we had been there before. We've had 6% growth before.
Mm.
It's not something that Namibia has not achieved in the past, and it's not something that Namibia will not be able to achieve in the future.
Eagle FM, the eye.
And for now, let's talk about why workshops like this are of utmost importance, and that is because of several key reasons. One, they help stimulate industrialization and value addition, as Africa's automotive sector remains concentrated in a few countries only, notably in South Africa. Other countries have limited participation. So ECA's work highlights that the region holds excellent potential to expand its participation in the regional and global automotive chain. And again, like I have indicated before, that it's bringing together associates and policymakers from Botswana, Lesotho, Namibia, South Africa, Zambia, and Zimbabwe, all under the Economic Commission for Africa. Now, another aspect is that it helps support small, medium enterprises. Now, medium, small, micro, small, and medium enterprises account for a large share of businesses and jobs across Africa, yet they face barriers such as a lack of skills, market intelligence, understanding what the market entails and how to actually access that market, quality compliance, financing, and access to buyers. Now, targeted capacity building helps bridge these gaps as they have the right people in the room to help discuss on this, as the Ministry of Mines and Energy is also part of this workshop. Now, it also makes procurement sustainable and inclusive as well, because sustainable procurement means that buyers, whether they are public or they are from the private sector, adopt environmental, social and governance criteria and often seek to include local content or small suppliers. Now, by training small medium enterprises in this space, workshops promote greater inclusion of local suppliers and higher standards, because at the end of the day, then people from different countries can also come on the table and say, we have such particular materials that can help produce a set or can help manufacture certain parts. Now, leveraging trade frameworks and regional integration, because with trade agreements like the AFCFTA, that is the Africa Continental Free Trade Area, small, medium enterprises can access larger markets, but they need to meet the standards and they need to understand the buyer expectation and, of course, the link into the value chain. So workshops such as this one help build that readiness. Also for economic development and job creation. Now, when small, medium enterprises link into value chains and supply markets, this stimulates economic growth and creates employment both directly and indirectly, and also promotes diversification. Now, for countries like Namibia, reducing reliance on commodity sectors by building manufacturing and supply chains strength is a strategic goal. But for now, let's take a listen to Johan de Jager on certifications and standards for entering the automotive industry and the supply chain in Africa. And de Jager is from the Automotive Investment Holdings, that is from South Africa.
Country-specific safety standards and country-specific homologation requirements, which still needs to be added to that. Then, of course, the automotive industry has got very clear ideas on business contact, things like ethics and code of conduct, etc. And then, as I mentioned, we've listed some South African-specific requirements here, but every other country has also got very specific requirements. We've spoken about health and safety, we've spoken about environmental. Once you've got all of these things in place and you start manufacturing the component, then the OEM specifics comes in. BMW, for example, wants 0.5 micron steel and Ford wants a 0.6 micron steel. Very small difference between the two, but it's all specific to that company, and something that also complicates the whole issue much more, and then, of course, also reduces the market size. Because now you've got two different OEMs with two different products, where if it was 4.6 micron, the volume is less. Here's a summary of some of the OEMs that's manufacturing in South Africa at the moment, and their standards. And you can see there that it's pretty much the same across everybody. ISO TS and IATF, right through the range, the VDA right through the range. There are some differences. Nissan is a bit different from Toyota, but essentially it's the same thing. They just give it another name. We mentioned, for example, PIPA, power production approval process. Some of OEMs call it supplier submission warrant, SSW, but the content is essentially the same. So if you've got the standard in for one OEM, it will conform to about 90% of all other OEMs. We heard yesterday also from the colleague from the DTIC in South Africa that we now want to almost force the Chinese OEMs to start manufacturing in South Africa or in the continent, and not only export their vehicles here. So we need to start looking at their requirements as well and start working towards them. I think part of a capacity building workshop like this, an initiative like this, is looking at the future. What do we need to do today to be able to conform in the future? So if you look at the Chinese OEMs, again, pretty much the same standards than all the other OEMs that we currently got around. So what are the barriers for MSMEs to enter this auto industry? Firstly, the cost is high. It's expensive to implement these systems and to maintain. Secondly, skills gaps. I've said earlier, these things are very complicated. And if you haven't worked for years, it's difficult to get a hang of it. Infrastructure limitations, calibrated equipment, traceability systems.
Let's pause here now and take a trip to the marketplace. But I'll be back shortly. Don't go anyway. This is On The Radar News Analysis.
Lipura nengelo wapubwa Eva Tere ulikoni maondu tuto ingida ashike kapeno nweku dite opoye ekukulile. Oshafafa na nongeshe faili mehola mo ihewe tike kovano hile koshuwana. Unongeshe faa ya pumbwa kukaraya kovano. Okupitira mo Eagle FM otuna evi toda njuka. Okukwetira oipindi konu kwa ndado inawa. Nuneudo otukwetira o special ange tashake ngeshe faa omarudi dayo loka. Opone ushendi fenawa nukumona oijamo ili nawa. Ninge kwa tafanona mwanika ko Eagle FM. Onore tatu imwe bali heali nola natu heali bali no heali. Ile kumberewa nora hetatu natu bali o hetatu matatu o mafelane Eagle FM the eye.
Eagle FM lets you express your constitutional rights of freedom of expression without fear of favor.
This is actually, to put it mildly, an economic scandal.
Fraud.
It's a scandal.
Scandal.
Why do you give a tender to somebody who does not have capacity to build? Why should you do that? You know a person who does not have the capacity to build.
Eagle FM lets you talk.
That's why I'm always telling people in Parliament, let me not take up my Katatura manners.
Right.
Because I grew up in Katatura.
Uh-huh.
And I will not hesitate to tell you off if it is needed to.
Be part of the debate by setting the agenda.
My response in terms of Rwanda at 6% is that we had been there before. We've had 6% growth before.
Mm.
It's not something that Namibia has not achieved in the past, and it's not something Namibia will not be able to achieve in the future.
Eagle FM, the eye.
Welcome back in our four economic indicators and trading economics. 1 US dollar today will get you 17 Namibian dollars and 16 cents, and 1 euro will get you 19 Namibian dollars and 86 cents. 1 pound sterling will get you 22 Namibian dollars and 52 cents. 1 Swiss franc is equal to 21 Namibian dollars and 46 cents. 1 Botswana pula today will get you 1 Namibian dollar and 28 cents. Now let's move over to trading economics. Portugal's annual inflation rate was confirmed at 2.3% in October 2025. That is down slightly from 2.4% in September and marking the lowest level since May. Now the figure remains close to the European Central Bank's 2.0% target, reflecting a continued easing in price pressures, largely driven by lower inflation in food and non-alcoholic beverages at 3.5% versus 4.0%, housing and utilities at 1.9% versus 2.2%, and restaurants and hotels at 5.7% versus 6.2%. Now, in contrast, transport inflation held steady at 1.9%, while price growth accelerated in recreation and culture at 1.4% versus 1.0%, and miscellaneous goods and services at 3.2% versus 2.1%. Now, meanwhile, core inflation, which excludes volatile items such as food and energy, rose to 2.2% from 2.0% the previous month, suggesting underlying price pressures persist. Now, the dollar index hovered around 99.6 on Wednesday, attempting to rebound after 3 consecutive sessions of losses as traders braced for the imminent end of the US government shutdown and grew increasingly confident that the Federal Reserve will have more room to cut interest rates. Now, House members are set to return to Washington today to vote on a deal to restore funding to federal agencies. If the bill passes, President Trump is expected to sign it into law, paving the way for the government to resume normal operations within days. Now, meanwhile, market pricing suggests about 65% chances of another 25 basis point Fed cut next month. Now, on the data front, ADP's high frequency figures released yesterday showed private employers cutting roughly 11,250 jobs per week in the 4 weeks to October, fueling concerns over the labor market. The consumer price inflation rate in India fell to 0.25%, in October of 2025 from the downwardly revised 1.44% in the previous month. Now, that is the lowest on record and well below the market consensus of a softer slowdown to 0.48%. It was the ninth consecutive month that the inflation rate was below the Reserve Bank of India's 4% target and the third in the sequence that was below the 2 percentage point lower tolerance bank of 2%, prompting calls for the central bank to deliver more rate cuts. Now, food prices, which account for nearly half of the weight of the consumer basket, fell by 5.02% annually. Now, that is the sharpest decline on record after the 2.33% drop last month. Also, inflation moderated for housing at 2.96% and held below the 2% threshold for housing and light. The Bank of Zambia reduced its key policy rate by 25 basis points to 14.25% at its regular meeting on November 12, 2025, therefore implementing its first rate cut since August 2020. Now, the move followed a continued moderation in inflation during the third quarter as policymakers sought to ease monetary conditions while steering price growth back within the target range. Now, annual inflation eased to 11.9% in October, which is the lowest level in over 2 years, down from 12.3% in September. Now, the central bank projected that inflationary pressures will keep moderating in the near term, with average price growth expected at 7.6% in 2026, that is slightly below the 7.7% forecasted at the previous MPs meeting. Now, policymakers noted, however, that risks linked to external conditions and domestic supply factors remain. Italy's industrial production jumped by 2.8% month-on-month in September 2025, following an upwardly revised 2.7% drop in August and beating market forecast of a 1.5% rise. Now, this marked the strongest monthly gain since August 2022, driven by a rebound across all main industrial groups, namely energy in August, capital goods, intermediate goods, and consumer goods. Now, on a yearly basis, industrial output increased by 1.5% in September, that is after an upwardly revised 3% decline in the previous month and defying market expectations of a 0.5% fall. Now, with that being said, let's pause right here and take a trip to the marketplace. We'll be back with news beyond the borders of Namibia. And also remember that today is Wednesday, hence the need for you to grab your copy of the Villager e-paper and read up on social and economic news. Now, remember, every Monday, Wednesday, and every Friday, we produce the Villager e-paper for you to consume on social and economic news. So today's headline covers the following. Today's e-paper covers the following headlines. Informal economy worth around 40 billion Namibian dollars. Electricity costs, green schemes, about 34.9 million Namibian dollars in the past 12 months. Mayor's Forum tasked with addressing rapid urbanization, a Coca Green Scheme project to yield first harvest in 2026. Deciding not to decide, preventing more Ministry of Finance flip-flops on PDMs. That is an opinion piece by Joseph Shehama. With that being said, we pause here now. We'll see you after the commercial break for news beyond the borders of Namibia. Stay tuned. And should you also be interested in partaking in the news bulletin to share opinions and contributions, 083-288-401 is the number in studio.
My friend, why do you seem so worried?
Ace, I am planning an event for next weekend, eh? And I don't know how to best get people to hear about it.
Saima, don't worry about those small things. Contact Eagle FM today. Eagle FM has a dedicated team that can travel anywhere countrywide to broadcast live at any event, such as a promotion, organizational launch, anniversary, wedding, funeral, political or traditional and church events, and basically any event that you wish to broadcast on a national level. Call them now and talk to Monica at 081-270-3727 or the office number 083-288-400. Eagle FM, the I.
Lipurane ngeno wapumbwa Eva tere ulikoni maondo tuto ingida ashike kapeno nweko tete okoye ekukurile. Oshafafa na nongeshe faili mehola mo ihewe tike kovano ile koshiwana. Onongeshe faa ya pumbwa kukaraya kovano. Okupitira mo Eagle FM otuna evi to danjuka. Okukwetira oipindi konu honda doi nawa. Nune udo otukwetira o special ange tashake ngeshe faa omarudi dayo loka. Okone ushendi penawa nukumona oijamo ili nawa. Ninge pata fanona Monica ko Eagle FM. Onmara etatu imwe mbali heali nola natu heali bali no heali. Ile kumberewa nora hetatu natu bali o hetatu matatu o mafilane Eagle FM the eye.
Eagle FM lets you express your constitutional rights of freedom of expression without fear of favor.
This is actually, to put it mildly, an economic scandal.
Fraud.
So not fraud, it's a scandal.
Scandal.
Why do you give a tender to somebody who does not have capacity to build? Why should you do that? You know, a person who does not have the capacity to build.
Eagle FM lets you talk.
That's why I'm always telling people in parliament, let me not take up my Katatura manners.
Right.
Because I grew up in Katatura. Uh-huh. And I will not hesitate.
Goeie nuus, Skimba het nou nog beter geword. Ons het splinternuwe funksies bygevoeg om jou ervaring vinniger, beter en kragtiger te maak as ooit tevore. As jy gereed om die volle potensiaal van Skimba te geniet, kry alle eksklusiewe funksies vir slegs $36 per maand of spaar selfs meer met ons spesiale intekenplanne. 5% afslag vir 'n 3 maande intekening, 10% afslag vir 'n 6 maande intekening en 25% afslag vir 'n 12 maande intekening. Kies die beste plan vir jou werk en geniet al die voordele wat Imba bied teen 'n onverbeterlike prys. Imba, waar die wêreld saamkom, laai dit af en teken vandag aan.
Right?
Because I grew up in Katatura,
uh-huh.
And I will not hesitate to tell you off if it is needed to do.
Be part of the debate by setting the agenda.
My response in terms of Rwanda at 6% is that we had been there before. We've had 6% growth before.
Mm.
It's not something that Namibia has not achieved in the past, and it's not something Namibia will not be able to achieve in the future.
Eagle FM, the eye.
And now for news beyond the borders of Namibia. We're starting off in South Africa with South Africa's first locally manufactured vaccine for cholera.
Aaron Mosoledi has described the first vaccine manufactured end-to-end in South Africa after a 50-year hiatus as a milestone that will ensure citizens are not left behind should another pandemic strike. The minister reflected on the challenges the country faced in securing vaccines during the COVID-19 pandemic. He says the locally developed oral cholera vaccine makes a significant step in reclaiming the country's ability to protect its citizens.
The COVID-19 pandemic exposed the dangers of this dependence, where access to life-saving vaccines was often determined not by need, but by geography and global inequities. Today, we take a decisive step towards changing that story. We're changing our own story and writing our new chapter in history. Building local vaccine manufacturing capability is not just a luxury. It is a national necessity. It strengthens our sovereignty, enhances our health security, and ensures that our people are not left behind.
Motsoaledi's team members celebrated the milestone.
Providing care and support. This vaccine then is a response to that pain. It is a proactive step to ensure that no community in South Africa or on the continent is left vulnerable to such a deadly but preventable disease. For the communities like Hammanskraal, for our informal settlements, and for our communities across Africa, this vaccine offers new hope.
BioVac, in partnership with the South African Medical Research Council, began developing the vaccine that has now entered its first clinical trial phase in 2022.
The cholera vaccine project, once it's licensed, is important to South Africa, even though South Africa has small outbreaks of cholera. It does two things. The first thing that it does is that it prepares us for outbreaks and pandemics. So whilst we don't have a big cholera outbreak, but we need to be pandemic ready, we need to be outbreak ready. So when the next pandemic, this really would be a test about whether we can develop products from scratch and we can be able to be pandemic ready. That's the first thing that it does. The second thing that this product will really be destined for areas where a cholera is endemic.
Participants in the clinical trial say they have not experienced any adverse side effects so far.
No after effects, the taste buds, it was okay, it doesn't kill the taste buds, it was fine.
Originally, I'm from Bushbuck Ridge, so I do know people who do share water with animals, so I know a few people that have been affected by this cholera.
Its manufacturers say they are targeting markets beyond South Africa, while local government officials maintain that the provision of clean drinking water remains a national priority. Balintle Mthethwa, SABC News, Johannesburg.
Now, Health Minister Aaron Motsoaledi of South Africa has expressed pride in South Africa's first fully locally manufactured vaccine. And Motsoaledi says the development of the oral cholera vaccine will help reduce the country's dependency on international pharmaceutical companies. He was speaking during the launch of the clinical trial of the vaccine in Soweto. Now let's take a listen to a discussion on the lack of direct flights hampering Africa's tourism growth. Let's take a listen.
Broadcaster of the G20 South Africa 2025.
Now, improving Africa's air connectivity is essential for unlocking tourism growth across the continent. Less than one in five airline routes within Africa are direct, forcing many travelers to transit through Europe or to go through the Middle East to get back to Africa. I mean, according to a full professor of tourism geography at Vaal University of Technology, Professor Kaitano Dube, this limits investment, it raises travel costs, and it restricts intra-African tourism opportunities. As South Africa leads the G20 presidency, one of the group's top tourism priorities is advancing seamless air travel through modernized air service agreements. Well, we've got Professor Dube with us to chat about this topic. One very close to my heart, Professor Dube, I'm glad that we're addressing it, and it's good to have you on the program.
Good morning, Leanne, and good morning to your listeners. Thank you for having me.
How did it happen that we have such few direct connections in Africa, trying to get from one country to another? What's the legacy behind this?
Okay, so I think as Africa, we have been late adopters in terms of the aviation, but this is in sharp contrast. But if you look at airlines such as South African Airways, they have got a very long history. And given that, I think Africa's development trajectory has been lagging as a result of it having been colonized and not having enough adequate infrastructure, particularly the airports. We don't have enough infrastructure and also the necessary capital in order for us to actually purchase those particular airlines. You also have to look at the demand in terms of travel. It has been minimal, to say the least, for the better part, particularly if you look at the 1980s, with the continent having been embroiled either in war or civil war, it was difficult for it to actually be part and parcel of the aviation market. But things have changed, and there is need to reflect that change as Africa seeks to trade within itself and also participate in tourism as a catalyst for tourism development. So that history is based on the wars, both from colonial era and also the issues that has to do with the instability that has been in parts of Africa. Yeah. But that picture has since changed.
Indeed. And so that's the kind of history, and it sets a picture for us. And hence we find out why we're in the situation. But if we can just carry on very quickly on that trajectory, if we can get a sense of the scale of the problem, and particularly looking at which regions within Africa are actually least connected, and perhaps highlight some bright spots where we're seeing that it is improving in certain areas.
Okay, so if you look at the entire continent, it is not connected. You have got the Southern Africa, I think, where we're very lucky in many respects, because you can actually move within the static region thanks to the hub that South Africa has provided. If you look at OR Tambo, it plays a critical role in terms of enhancing that particular connectivity. You can also look at the emergence of another hub. If you look at what is happening in Rwanda, there is also a hub connected that to Kenya and Ethiopia. Then you have got the north parts of Africa that also are connected from a northern perspective. But what we do not see is in many respects, the interlinkage between the north and the south. For example, if a person wants to travel, particularly, say, to Morocco, yeah. I was just checking, you only have connecting flights. But if you look at Morocco, you look at Egypt, these are some of the places that are most visited. So you therefore need to have some leverage where those regions are directly connected, so that you then start to realize some of the benefits of the open market to ensure that people and business and industry is connected. But for you to be able to do this, it was, I think, slightly better before COVID-19. We saw quite a number of airlines going under. I think colleagues and travelers would appreciate, particularly in South Africa, we lost quite a number of airlines, which disrupted, I think, the picture that we had seen where Africa was coming to be connected. South African Airways, which was the almost not the national flag carrier, but a continental flag carrier, has now since been replaced by Ethiopian Airways. Yeah. We see the troubles that Kenyan Airways KQ, which then can also adversely affect the growth that we have seen. But yeah. we are hoping that the developments that we see in Rwanda are going to assist in the picture.
Well, we certainly do hope that. And I mean, you know, you brought up Morocco because that's the one sort of destination that, again, I mean, I've looked at that very sort of actively. And I mean, you have to go via, whether it be, you know, the Mediterranean, Middle Eastern countries, and then come back. And it's a logistical nightmare and incredibly expensive. And that's the reality, is that the expense goes there. You know, the fact that we don't have direct routes, what do we attribute it to? Do we attribute it to cost? Is it political? Is it a commercial problem? You know, some people, and perhaps maybe it's a short-sighted view, and please correct me if I'm wrong, saying that, you know, that there's high operational costs and limited passenger demand. That's some reasons that are given. But, you know, perhaps you can elaborate more. What is the problem?
So I think it's a combination of factors. So even if you look at the regions where I was saying you have got a bit of better connectivity, particularly in Southern Africa, the cost of travel is seemingly very high due to, I think, if you look at the amount that it costs a person, if you look at the taxes that are actually charged, which makes it very difficult for airlines also to survive. We have had quite a number of airlines not seeing the light of the day because of those operational challenges. But we also have, in terms of, on top of what you have indicated, political connections and also market viability, we also have insistent problems that are associated with us not having adequate skills. I think those that are familiar with the aviation sector, you'll understand the challenge that we have with the air navigation, the technologists, which then affects the safety and makes it not as lucrative for people to actually come to Africa here for their lives. Yeah. So there are quite a number of things that we need to address. It's skills, it's security, it's also issues that has to do with political alignment and making sure that we have a market that the airline industry can survive.
Yeah, and it's so important. I mean, it's a vow that I have personally taken that every year I want to visit a new African country. I've managed to do that for the last couple of years and they have exceeded every expectation. I've just got back from Namibia and I had the best time and it was just so wonderful. And I echo your sentiments within traveling around Southern Africa. That is much easier. My final question to you. I mean, I could carry on for much longer, but we don't have time. The G20, obviously we know that this is linked to it all. Do we have any leverage here? We've got all of these leaders. We've got everything. The world is focusing in on it. Is there some form of assistance that the G20 can push for more direct flights to improve tourism and trade on the continent?
So I think the G20 provides a necessary and very lucrative platform for the African region to sort of try and align its and also deal with some of the incessant problems that we see in the aviation sector. Being the aviation sector relies not only on the tourism industry, but you've got quite a number of government players that come into the fore. You've got your DICO, if you're looking at South Africa, you've got your transport department and your tourism department. What we can then use G20 is to try and leverage try to bring consolidation of policies, make it easy for air permits to be actually issued out, which can assist in terms of leveraging that. But we also need to look at the skills that South Africa can also leverage funding that is available from some of these rich countries to fund infrastructure, to fund some of the skills gap that we see. There's generally a growing demand for aviation skills, and we are failing to compete at
Efiloshisho otali kulandula kona ave wayuk. E kwashili palekolo marwendo paiwano kupitila mo NHB. O atupatele komesho kwashili palekolo afika mafio pedola emiliona omlongo da Namibia. Moshi joshe tukeshe kuyanja omakwafo unamiti enashane filoshisho lo paulumo mumbu. Kwa voveli ponje yoshilongo, shijoshi topo washo ijo yetu, tashiningwa inapawe banando ishoshe layash. Opo umone ya kulolo polis mwule ominute disyonailela, lishangifako nhp.com.na omanga ino ya morwendo ponje yoshilongo. E mangono malandula fano, odo dino kulandurwa. NHP, rooted in care for you.
Your health, your life, your peace of mind. NHP, we're about you.
South Africa's statistics report reveals that unemployment rate in South Africa has declined.
Unemployment rate fell to 31.9% in the third quarter of this year, down from 33.2% in the preceding quarter. There was an increase of 248,000 in the number of employed persons, pushing the total employment figure to 17.1 million, while the number of unemployed persons decreased by 360,000 to 8 million. Six of the 10 industries checked by Stats SA recorded employment gains in the third quarter, while four saw decreases.
The industries that created employment are construction, 130,000 jobs, followed by community and social services, 116,000 jobs. We saw 108,000 jobs created from trade. And of course, those that have lost jobs, in the main, it's manufacturing. Manufacturing lost about 62,000 jobs, followed by finance, real estate, and business services. There were 54,000 jobs lost.
Economists say the decrease in the official unemployment rate is a welcome development and could mean that unemployment has peaked and will begin to stabilize. While unemployment remains elevated, it may begin to improve along with the expected economic recovery as structural constraints are addressed.
So it certainly is good news to an extent. And if you look at some other economic data, it seems to me as if we could have reached the bottom of the unemployment cycle. And with a bit of luck, we can see unemployment stabilizing here and actually improve over the next couple of months, because some other economic data suggests a slight improvement in economic growth. But if we are honest, then we would admit that the levels of unemployment in South Africa is just far too high, and it's likely to remain very, very high as long as the economy is growing at a relatively low pace, and that is what we're currently experiencing. But some good news, but not good enough.
The number of discouraged job seekers or individuals who want to work but have stopped actively looking increased by 36,000 during the quarter. Young people continue to bear the brunt of the high unemployment. Data shows that 4 in every 10 young people aged between 15 and 34 were not in employment, education or training in the third quarter. Gloria Sefako-Musi, SABC News, Johannesburg.
Now let's move on to Zambia, as Zambia has launched its first ever gold CIP plant in Nangoma. That is a carbon in pulp plant.
Seated on a 70-hectare land, this is the first ever carbon in pulp gold processing plant in Mombwa District.
Constructed at the cost of $15 million United States dollars, the X Point gold processing mine is set to process 800 metric tons of gold ore per day. Commissioning the plant in Nangoma constituency was Vice President Mtale Nalumango, who expressed government's commitment towards strengthening the mining sector.
The government of the Republic of Zambia sincerely appreciates today X Point Investment Limited for its confidence in Zambia's conducive investment climate and its decision to invest in a facility of this magnitude. This plant, with a processing capacity of over 800 tons of ore per day, is a landmark development that signifies technological advancement in our mining sector.
The vice president used the platform to condemn attacks on President Hakainde Hichilema experienced earlier at a public rally in Chingola district.
Allow me to use this platform to wholeheartedly condemn the behavior of those who behaved in a thuggery manner to bring insecurity on the president of the republic in Chingola. That is unacceptable and must be condemned by any well-meaning Zambians and beyond.
And Senior Chief Shakumbila, who was present during the launch, expressed displeasure with how miners are treated in the district.
These investments cannot exist if artisanal licenses are disturbed. We want that to be encouraged, because these are the people who are feeding these plants we are celebrating today. If we disturb these small companies who are feeding these people, then these companies will fold up. They will go. Artisanal licenses are the people who should be also protected.
For the local leadership, the coming of the plant will be of immense benefit to uplifting the livelihoods in the area and further called for environmental protection.
As you mine, as you process, we need to ensure that you protect the environment. Pollution here is becoming a menace, particularly to our cattle. As you process, let's dispose those dangerous chemicals in a good way.
Share with the provincial administration, the constituents and the district your robust corporate social responsibility strategy, so that whoever asks and questions about what we are doing, all of us will come to your defense and say this is what their strategy is talking about.
For the X Point and its cooperating partner, Zimasi, the aim is to upscale on its employment levels to 800 people and improve on its corporate social responsibility programs.
This facility represents a tangible manifestation of that policy, effectively translating government strategy, a strategic vision, into a practical and a reality thing that we see today.
Chansa Kunda, ZNBC News, Mumbwa.
Still in Zambia, President Hakainde Hichilema of Zambia has reaffirmed Zambia's readiness to attract investment in the energy sector.
President Hakainde Hichilema has reiterated that energy is vital for the country's economic growth, as it supports operations in various industries. The president said this when a delegation of seven Chinese companies affiliated to Trina Power China paid a courtesy call on him at State House. These companies are set to invest in renewable energy projects and innovative solutions in areas such as smart energy, agriculture, and a $12 million US electric vehicle company to be based in Lusaka. President Hakainde Hichilema has since reaffirmed Zambia's commitment to attracting investment with a particular focus on the energy sector.
Now we want to use this challenge as an opportunity for investors in the energy sector. I see you are talking about rural energy, small, capacity, generating capacity, and obviously to distribute to the customers. That is welcome. So we're looking for small projects, micro if you want, small, medium, large projects. They are all welcome. They have space in our economy, in our energy sector, because I think with energy we can drive then the whole agenda to grow the economy. And if I may extend from there, obviously the issues around EV is important because, yes, it's green, it's environmentally friendly, but it also reduces the consumption and fossil fuels.
President Hichilema also said land availability is a key factor for the success of these investments.
To scan not just the traditional land. Remember, we've only two land tenures here. Customary land and state land. So there's a lot of state land which is available. It's already on titles so that they can, access those pieces of land as well very quickly. Where we have a substation near, then the only land we have is customary land. We will facilitate that as well.
Speaking at the same meeting, delegation leader and Kaombwe Constituency Member of Parliament, Aaron Mwanza, commended the government for creating a favorable investment environment. Dr. Ma Yifeng, who was leading the Chinese delegation, disclosed that the electric vehicle project will initially be established in Lusaka with a goal of reducing fuel consumption.
To bring these investors to Zambia, we wrote a proposal for request for investment feasibility study. So there are seven companies, and we have visited ZDA, Ministry of Energy, so they have made decisions to invest in an EV vehicle worth over $12 million.
As with the growth of the business, so we are trying to expand in the thickener phase. So the goal is trying to reduce the fuel consumption significantly. So the first one, it will be the EV system, including the EV charging vehicle, charging station. And so we would like to have the concept to bring EV car, like 1,000 kind of EV car from China to Zambia. And we also build a charging station here so that you have the charging system. You can easily charge all of the electric cars.
So from what he indicated, there's about five or six different sectors that are being covered in terms of interest from the delegation. But of course, what came out prominently is the fact that their major interest is in the energy sector. But of course, they did express interest in agriculture.
Kasuka Sakambo reporting in Lusaka.
Meanwhile, Kenya showcases cleaner energy project as Africa seeks climate financing.
One little spark turns into a flame that quickly heats up a midday snack. Tree Hill School in the Kibra informal settlement in Kenya's capital, Nairobi, is one of a growing number of urban institutions turning to alternative sources to meet their energy needs.
We had an issue of usage of firewood and the air around the way it was affecting the students.
With the help of Umanda Trust, a Kenyan civil society organization, the school built a special ablution block. The local community pays to use the washrooms and the human waste is directed to a biodigester. The biogas generated is used to cook school meals and power the local community.
There are people who are still holding on to the fact that, it's not clean energy. And so talking to a few traders here and there, asking them to, go and try it out to see that it can also reduce their overall operating cost.
But this is only one small piece in a bigger puzzle.
as the world becomes more aware of the need to shift to renewable energy sources in Kenya, where many such small-scale projects exist, stakeholders are exploring ways to scale them up in order to make more of an impact.
Kenya is a leader in the production and use of renewable energy in sub-Saharan Africa. It generates over 90% of its electricity from renewable sources such as solar panels, which soak up the sun's rays, as well as wind turbines and hydroelectric plants. Yet for millions of households and businesses, power remains expensive. Many Kenyan households prefer cooking using gas, charcoal or firewood, which leads to the cutting down of trees and depletion of forests. Making the shift, especially on a small scale, also comes with cost implications.
There are some challenges that we may talk about when it comes to energy harvesting in Kenya, one of them being the cost of renewable energy is a bit high.
Despite its significant need for improved energy access, Africa receives just 2% of the global investment in renewable energy production. The Nairobi Declaration on Climate Change set a target to increase Africa's renewable energy generation capacity to 300 gigawatts by 2030 from 56 gigawatts in 2022. At the UN Climate Conference in Brazil, one of Africa's goals will be to campaign for increased financing for energy transition. Already in Kenya, stakeholders are pushing for increased government support.
If the government can come with a public-private partnership, that we also try and bring on board major companies, the manufacturers of these power modules, storages, they work together. That's why I say it's a concerted effort for everyone that need to be taken seriously.
The impact of this effort, stakeholders say, would ripple across the continent, lighting a spark that could power up the continent sustainably. Wilkes Anyabwasi, GTN.
Meanwhile, Nigeria's return to global debt market signals confidence amid caution.
Nigeria's return to the Eurobond market comes at a time when global interest rates have begun to ease and investor appetite for emerging market debt has strengthened. But there were initial concerns over the performance of the bond after U.S. President Donald Trump threatened military action in Nigeria over alleged Christian killings. However, those fears would vanish into thin air as the bond ended up being oversubscribed by more than 400%.
It's a testament to continued investor confidence in our country and our reform agenda and Mr. President's leadership, despite the political headwinds which we are all aware of. The market shrugged off those political considerations and focused on the economic fundamentals of Nigeria.
And it's not just foreign investors who have shown faith in the Nigerian economy through the government paper. Nigerian investors also staked around $1.4 billion in the bonds, also demonstrating their confidence in the economy and government reforms.
So for the investors, they're looking at a Nigeria that is no longer paying huge amounts of dollars as PMS subsidy, and it's no longer defending the Naira with so much of its foreign capital. So that opens up Nigerian budget to then take on more debt, which is what we've done. The rates are a bit high. But we're able to borrow this amount and get the oversubscription is also positive. So I would say for now, a balanced view, I'll give it a B. It shows that the international community likes the reforms.
And with the window of cheap borrowing likely to close soon, experts say Nigeria must move quickly, not just to borrow, but to build as there are risks involved.
The main risk is repayment risk because we are borrowing in dollars and we're borrowing at, as you said, 8-9%. We're going to pay back that dollar from oil sales because Nigeria really is a mono economy. We make the bulk of our oil revenues from exporting crude oil and oil-related products. So what happens if oil goes to, say, $40 or $50 a barrel? Then we're in big trouble.
The truth is that if we don't maximize the resources that we have, especially the borrowings, then we are just creating burdens for those coming behind us, and that's not sustainable.
Beyond Nigeria, several other African countries, including Kenya, Angola, and the Democratic Republic of Congo, have also issued Eurobonds in recent weeks, taking advantage of strong investor demand for higher-yielding assets.
Investors are now open to investing in bonds that are not U.S. dollar denominated, want to diversify away from the US dollar because of the tariffs and, of course, the fact that the US is able to sanction you and hold your foreign reserves. So folks are looking to invest in a different currency that is not a dollar. That's the overall conditions happening. So when Angola, when Benin, when Congo come to the market, they are also emerging markets offering very, very high yields that allow diversification from the dollar. Hence, you see the strong demand for those currencies, for those bonds, for those equities.
The Nigerian Debt Management Office says the bonds will be admitted to the official list of the UK Listing Authority and available to trade under London Stock Exchange's regulated markets, the FMDQ Securities Exchange, and the Nigerian Exchange. Deji Bademasi, CGTN, Lagos, Nigeria.
And with that, we have come to the conclusion of today's episode of On the Radar News Analysis. Now do stay tuned for the Uncle Nana Dengue program brought to you by Loise Shimi. And after that, the Home Run Show with Dwight and Helmut from 16:30. Now don't forget the Business Economic segment with David Shambe from 1800 hours. From Indafa, happy Juju. It is goodbye. I'll see you again next time. Now, should you be interested in listening to today's news bulletin, head over to our podcast session. That is by downloading the Eagle FM app. Also, do listen to us via the Eagle FM website. Goodbye and have yourself a wonderful Wednesday ahead.